Finnish presents Doctor Who, Short Trips. Under Odin's Eye, by Alice Cavender. Read by Nicola Bryant. As Acadia Minor's one sun peeped over the horizon, a tall man with very angular features walked through the staff entrance of the Odin Megastore and clocked in for his shift.
"'Appily ever after!' intoned a colleague passing by.
"'Appily ever after,' he replied, dourly,
on a background hum of shutters being rolled up and the beep of forklift trucks, he pondered his lot as he punched his card. He was Mr. Average Barrosian, and he knew that. With his reasonable looks, his identikit cottage, and a regular wage. But as he replaced his card and drew his finger down the rack, pausing at another employee's card, he felt much more than that.
"'Appily ever after, Lucas!' said a voice behind him.
His hand fell from the rack, and he turned to the other man.
"'It's no good mooning over Ingrid,' the bloke said kindly. "'She's living the high life now, hobnobbing with the glitterati of the galaxy. "'Probably forgotten all about us.'
"'She hasn't, Sven,' countered Lucas, pulling out a tattered postcard from his overall.
"'Not this again,' said Sven, but his friend held up a hand to silence him.
"'I'm having a great time with the Interworld marketing team. Cocktail o'clock. Miss you all.'
"'Remember the good time we had at East Ridge Forest,' quoted Lucas. "'You're paranoid, mate,' said Sven, looking anxiously over his shoulder. "'And you'll get us both the sack. It's not very hoogly of you.'
Lucas ploughed on. "'Sven, she hates pretentious parties, and you know what happened at the forest,' Sven sighed.
"'We all had a massive row about the merits of corporate housing, which was actually more about you feeling miffed, Lucas, because she wouldn't move in with you.'
"'But Sven, you're not listening,' hissed Lucas.
"'It doesn't sound like her. This is a coded message.'
Sven shook his head.
"'Mate, you need to get with the programme. You ran a market stall, living hand-to-mouth, sharing a shack with your whole family. You now have a stable income and your own home. You've got a lava lamp in your fireplace instead of a cooking pot. We owe everything to Odin Industries.'
"'My point exactly,' said Lucas. "'We're all in debt to them, "'so we're not complaining when people who get transferred out don't come back.'
"'Oh, Lucas,' Sven said firmly. "'I'm going to the shop floor in the hope that by lunchtime you'll have got over yourself.'
He strode off purposefully, turned the corner, then stopped and sighed. Behind him, he heard Lucas say,
"'Oh, hello, my lovely. How can I help you?'
which was followed by a low growl, like that of a street mutt guarding its bone. He nervously peered back around the corner, but the corridor was empty. As the camp klaxon blared, Ingrid rolled over on her thin mattress. Every bone in her body ached as the sunlight pierced her eyelids. She regarded the limp body spread-eagled over the opposite bed, like a doll tossed aside, its arm across its face. The arm fell down and the eyes fluttered open woozily.
"'Lords of Fire!' she cried. "'Lucas!'
She shot off the mattress and knelt on the floor beside him.
"'Oh, Ingrid, my lovely,' he muttered. "'We'll be tripping the light fantastic.'
"'Well, you're tripping, mate, but that's the sedative.'
She hauled him round to sit him on the edge of the bed. He gazed around him at the sparse surroundings and the expanse of forest visible through the unglazed window.
"'So... Shepherd's Hut Sheik. Is this the new thing on Arcadia Major, then?
But we're not on Arcadia Major, Ingrid started to say.
We're in East Ridge, like your postcard said, Lucas finished.
What happened? Asked Ingrid.
I think I spoke out of turn, he grinned. The last thing I remember is a door opening on the Odin Tower and someone pushing me through it. Then a bright light and here I am. No one's ever been in the tower that I know of, and it's not covered by storm monitors. I thought it was just decorative.
Always punching above your weight, said Ingrid, pushing towards him some boots that had been left by his bunk. Get these on. We're late for corrective labour, and you don't want the guards to notice you.
What guards? He said, looking around him. She sighed.
You don't want to know, Lucas. You don't want to know.
The raw echo of the TARDIS engines ebbed to silence as the console's central column came to rest, while the doctor darted in and out of the control room carrying boxes. Perry watched him, her hands on her hips.
What's with all the junk, Doctor? She asked. I thought we were going shopping.
He picked through a box and shoved some electrical components into his pockets.
Ah, have some faith, dear Perry. This, I think you'll find, is the currency with which we will fund your shopping spree, he said, waggling a gadget in her direction. Barossi Market operates on a barter system. Here, put these in your pockets.
Perry sighed and took the trinkets.
The dollar is good with most people. Can't they just bite their coins to check they're genuine, like in the Westerns? It's not very convenient for tourists, she replied, activating the scanner.
They don't have a lot of those. They're not as advanced as neighbouring planets. For example, there are no aircraft yet, called the doctor, his head in a box. Prepare yourself for the most colourful, rambunctious and enthralling spectacle. The place is alive with horses, scooters and rickshaws. Stalls full of exotic vegetables piled high. Musicians, magicians, sumptuous street food, stray dogs. And the people. Oh, the people! Lively, quarrelsome, spirited and exuberant.
I can't see why that would appeal to you at all, teased Perry. But from your description, I'm not sure the TARDIS has made it to Buros.
The doctor straightened up and peered at the scanner.
It showed a vista of a couple of stalls of wilted veg being minded by an old woman sat on an upturned bucket. The console confirmed their whereabouts.
How strange, said the doctor, flipping the door control and striding out into the marketplace, Perry trailing him. Excuse me, he said to the stall holder. What happened to your market?
The woman gave him a resigned look and pointed over his shoulder.
Hygge,
she said. The doctor turned to see. A mile away, on the edge of town, a tall structure like a factory chimney, but not venting any smoke. It was surrounded by a complex of low buildings. The design was minimalist, with a cheery but understated orange stripe decorating every building. Barossians, recognisable by their rough-hewn features, were walking like so many columns of ants towards the complex, all wearing overalls or shirts bearing the orange stripe. Most were coming from an estate in the valley.
That's all new, cried the doctor. The hodgepodge of local dwellings has gone. So disappointing. Such great hospitality.
It looks like a gingerbread house trailer park, said Perry. Kinda neat. I guess the factory owns it, as the houses have the orange stripes too.
Kinda neat, retorted the doctor. This place was a bastion of indigenous culture, not a subsidiary of Monotony Inc.
Cheer up! Maybe this is progress, Doctor. Maybe they have airplanes, too, said Perry.
The doctor squinted into the distance.
You know, I don't think it is a factory, Perry, he replied.
Are the TARDIS translation circuits on the blink? Perry asked. I didn't get what the woman said.
I'm afraid I did, Perry. Come on, let's go shopping after all, the doctor said wearily, joining a line of people marching towards the tower.
The managing director of Odin Megastore was holding court in front of a Reach Out and Hygge sign. A dozen employees paid rapt attention.
Next on the agenda, we've had another volunteer for the Interworld program. Lucas is on his way to share his warehouse logistics skills with stores on Arcadia Major.
Happily ever after, chorused the room.
Though I like to think I keep the best for myself, the director chuckled and the room laughed with him. Thanks to the dedication of everyone at this flagship branch, I can confirm we have another 10 stores opening globally in the next quarter. I am keen to hear ideas, ones that fit the Hygge model, of course. His team nodded agreement. Remember, we're selling a lifestyle that every Arcadian can aspire to.
A lass with a pencil tucked behind her ear produced a sketch pad and pushed it across the table.
I had some inspiration on the way to work today. Could we go in this direction with the walk-in wardrobe range?
Her boss pondered a moment.
Very good, Birgitta. Lovely use of the quirky Scandinavian vowels in the design. You've really got the functional but funky ethos. Get the chippies to knock up some samples for me.
The doctor and Perry stood at the entrance to the Odin Megastore. Furniture, clothing, kitchenware, food hall, read Perry from the store guide.
Everything the market used to sell, said the doctor glumly.
The store kind of goes round in a loop, Perry continued. We'll have to go through furniture first. Come on, it'll be fun, she said, heading off into the maze.
A minute later, they were both lost. A store assistant approached them.
Hi, I'm Sven, store supervisor. May I help you? He asked.
Sven, guffawed the doctor.
You're as Barosian as they come, hardly a Sven.
And proceeded to rap the man's chest with his fist, as if trying to find out if he was hollow.
Doctor! Cried Perry.
It's all right, Perry, it's a local greeting, assured the doctor.
Sven stepped backwards and glanced at the other customers embarrassedly.
Well, sir, I can see you haven't visited Buros lately. The traditional greeting is a little, passé these days, along with the duelling and the debates. But those were my primary reasons for visiting, complained the doctor.
What's in fashion now? Asked Perry.
Hugs, said Sven, enveloping her in an embrace.
Perry giggled.
Drinking glog by the fireside, Sven continued. Close harmony singing and marshmallows, mostly.
He let go of Perry.
Marsh! Oh! Cried the doctor. When did all this start?
When Director Thor came from Scandinavia, explained Sven.
He tapped into the young people. He was cool. We didn't know what we were missing until he showed us. It's not just the fashion. It's the laid-back approach. He taught us that not everything has to be an argument. We can chill out together. He calls the approach Hygge. In other words, he's busy turning a Technicolor people into monochrome, said the doctor.
I'm quite enjoying it so far, said Perry.
You get on like a house on fire with my friend Lucas, doctor, said Sven, his jolliness fading.
Why's that? Asked Perry.
He thinks the company disappears its critics, whispered Sven.
I should like to talk to this Lucas, said the doctor.
That's a little difficult, explained Sven. You see, he's disappeared.
The prisoners hauled a 30-foot felled tree trunk into a clearing. Lucas paused to catch his breath.
Don't stop yet, Lucas. It's not a designated rest break, said Ingrid.
This is ridiculous, gasped Lucas.
There aren't any guards. There's no fence.
We know which way north is. It's probably 3 days' walk to the nearest town.
Another man, new to the work gang, joined in.
I've had enough, he said. You're a scaremongerer, he pointed to Ingrid. You just like being in charge. And if we got the guts to go and you haven't, you won't have anyone to boss around. But they'll come after you, said Ingrid levelly. And we won't be able to help you.
The man hefted an axe and set off into the forest. The rest looked at each other with a mixture of hope and fear, then saw the grave expression Ingrid wore and returned to their graft. They had shifted another 2 logs before they heard the screams. The sound stopped abruptly, and the silence that fell afterwards was deafening.
Thank you for seeing us, Director, said the Doctor, striding into Thor's office. We're freelancers. Here are a few samples from our portfolios.
The Doctor brandished a few pencil sketches of coffee tables from 1960s Earth.
Please, have a beanbag or a chair, hesitated Thor. I'm the Doctor and this is Perry, said the Doctor as they took a seat.
Cinnamon bun? Thor offered them the plate. Perry took one.
I'll take a look, said Thor in a measured tone. But judging by your apparel, I fear your style may be a little outlandish for our minimalist ranges. Outlandish indeed, Director, because unlike many of your staff, I have actually been to Earth and many other places. Through me you have a hotline to HIP, the Doctor declared.
Perry sniggered into her bun.
I see, said Thor warily. We focus on simple Scandinavian-style designs here. So you are Scandinavian? Asked the Doctor. Of course, replied Thor.
Perry looked quizzically at the Doctor. Although Thor looked less angular than the average Barrosian, more towards the human shape, he certainly would have turned heads walking down any Earth main street.
So you're from Scandinavia's capital, Berlin, then? Ventured the Doctor.
Indeed, there's nowhere finer, said Thor.
Oh, please, scoffed the Doctor. You're not from any Scandinavian country on the planet Earth. You don't even look human. So how did you come by your Terran styles?
Thor quickly shut the office door.
Please, not so loud. It hurts no one if the Acadians believe in a fantasy.
I bought some anthropological data from a galaxy-hopping entrepreneur who had been to Earth, and I reinvented myself. As a Scandinavian, I am exotic to the Acadians, which is rather the selling point of our product.
I am the brand.
Have you come to blackmail me?
No, replied the Doctor indignantly.
Thor regained his composure.
I will look at your designs. I am sure we can come to an accommodation. However, there will be a strict non-disclosure clause in the contract, effective immediately. I thought your features were a little too soft for you to be locals.
Interestingly, the Arcadians don't have interstellar transport yet. But you're sending staff off-world.
It's a great perk, isn't it? But I can't discuss staff contracts, I'm afraid. All I can say is the transfers have all been cleared by the Barrosian government, or what passes for government here.
There was a knock at the door, and a tall, lean woman let herself in. She wore a good suit, but seemed ill at ease in it, like it was itchy. She looked the Doctor and Perry up and down, her eyes narrow.
Thor, HR meeting!
She barked at him, and left, leaving the door open.
Excuse me, Thor said. Human resources call. Come back tomorrow. I'll have a contract for you.
He ushered them out of his office, locked it, and followed the surly woman.
You didn't ask about Lucas,
Perry protested, wiping crumbs off her top.
No,
But I did get this off his desk when he went to the door, the doctor said, waving a thin buff file under her nose. The doctor lay on a stripy mattress, his hands behind his head, while Perry sat in a nearby rocking chair as customers passed by. Sven stood reading the contents of a buff file placed between the pages of a catalogue.
Lords of Fire, he muttered, turning the pages. I knew we were expanding, but this projection shows hundreds of Odins across the globe.
What's the big deal? Thor is chasing the American dream, said Perry.
Expansion at that rate is risky, if profit is your motive, said the doctor. There are even a few stores sighted on the plains, which makes no sense as so few live there, said Sven.
Plains, said the doctor. As in flat?
Oh, said Sven. Acadian forces used to have a defensive presence there, as it's the only place suitable for our neighbours to land their interstellar craft. But we've been at peace since Odin's interests have gone galactic. Thor is even an advisor to our people on interworlds trade.
Maybe it's not the American dream they're chasing, but a different one entirely, said the doctor. Have you had contact with your missing friends, Sven?
Sven pulled the tatty postcard out of his pocket.
Lucas dropped this card when he disappeared. He thought it was a coded message from our friend.
The doctor took the keepsake and peered at it.
Where is East Ridge? He demanded.
The TARDIS materialised in the forest, which looked peaceful on the scanner as Perry climbed into a set of Odin overalls.
For the record, Doctor, I don't like this plan, she said as she tugged on a cord zip.
It's very simple, my dear, the doctor insisted. The only link to East Ridge Sven could find on the company computer, which, by the way, has no firewall, shockingly lax, was the wood chip supplier, an Odin subsidiary. There's a logging crew, regular food supplies, but no employees listed. We're quite close to the camp here. It's not enclosed, so we have free access to see if the forest is hiding anything. Now, where's Sven got to?
Sven was outside completing a circuit of the TARDIS.
Yes, yes, the dimensions are a little beyond Acadian maths currently, but it is possible, said the doctor over his shoulder as he headed towards the camp.
No, it's not that. It's just there's something familiar about it, said Sven, turning.
But the doctor had gone ahead. He had a feeling of being watched and ran to catch up with his new friends. Something crept out from the trees and went to sniff the TARDIS.
The foreman tried to log into his portable computer.
Signal's rubbish out here. They should give me more notice of inspections, he moaned.
I'm sure the forestry inspectorate can overlook the lack of a welcome on this occasion. I do have an Odin escort.
The doctor indicated Sven, who did his best to not look terrified.
Now, my colleague Perry here needs to talk to the loggers, and I need to see your paperwork regarding the other sites.
The foreman frowned.
It's very serious, trust me. I'm a botanist, interrupted Perry. If we don't create an exclusion zone around the area, the Dutch elm disease may spread, and then you'll lose the whole forest. If any of your workers have been to your other sites, they may have spread it there too.
The doctor nodded gravely.
And then Odin Industries is likely to sue you personally for not preventing the spread, he said.
The foreman nodded for a woman to take Perry into the forest and handed her a shortwave radio. Perry could hear the buzz of chainsaws nearby. She looked backwards anxiously.
The doctor kept his game face on.
I've been told to liaise with Ingrid, she said.
You have an Ingrid, right? The woman nodded, handed her a hard hat, and led her into the forest. After a few minutes, the gloom gave way to a clearing. The lumberjacks paused as they saw the stranger. Ingrid? She asked, and a worker pushed up her visor and approached, closely followed by a man.
Sven sent me, Perry whispered. He's here, with the foreman.
This obviously worried Ingrid.
Is this a breakout? Lucas asked enthusiastically. I guess so, if you didn't sign up for this, said Perry, looking around. How come you're here?
Transmat, courtesy of my employer, replied Lucas. It's how their guards travel, apparently.
What guards? Asked Perry.
Hundreds of camps on multiple planets, said the doctor, passing the list to Sven. We've got our work cut out for us then.
They heard a noise behind them.
Tell me, Sven, the doctor said, did that fern there just growl at us?
I think it did, doctor, replied Sven nervously. There was a beep as the foreman's computer connection was restored. A picture flashed up on the screen, and although the image was poor, the colours of the doctor's coat and the rectangle of the TARDIS were clear, along with the word apprehend.
I remember now where I've seen the TARDIS before, said Sven, as he stared at the screen over the foreman's shoulder.
The man looked puzzled and studied the doctor. The doctor glanced at the screen, snatched the two-way radio out of the foreman's hand, bellowed, "Run!" and tore off in the direction of the TARDIS, dragging Sven with him. The creature in the ferns gave a long, hunting howl that carried deep into the forest. Many replies were heard as Ingrid shook her head at Perry in horror. The radio Perry's escort was carrying burst into life.
"Run, Perry! To the TARDIS!"
the doctor's voice crackled. Perry ran and Lucas followed eagerly. Ingrid grimaced and ran after them both. As Perry got within 100 yards of the TARDIS, snarling sounds converged on her from both sides. At knee height, through the ferns, she could see flashes of the black flank of some beast. She screamed as jaws came towards her. Behind the teeth, mad red eyes glistened. Then there was a crack and a thud, as Ingrid and Lucas beat off the walls with fallen branches. Perry was 10 yards from the TARDIS now, and over her shoulder she saw a pack of more than 20 beasts envelop the Borosians. She threw herself through the TARDIS doors and into the arms of the doctor. On the scanner was a seething mass of wolves, so dense they could no longer see Ingrid and Lucas beneath. Behind them, where Ingrid had felled a wolf, lay a tall, thin woman in a ripped HR uniform. Sven grabbed at the internal door to find the release, but the doctor shook his head.
"Turn it off!"
screamed Perry, and the doctor closed the scanner. Perry and Sven both collapsed to the floor, shaking, as the doctor dematerialized the TARDIS. The TARDIS hovered over Boris as Perry and Sven's shock wore off.
"I am sorry, Sven. We couldn't help your friends," said the doctor quietly. "The HR woman killed by Ingrid in the forest was a lycanthrope, a being that can shift between wolf and person. The TARDIS databanks show that there is only one planet in this galaxy where lycanthropes are indigenous. It is also the home of the people called the Morpaetha.
Our once, and again, mortal enemy," sighed Sven. "The Morpaetha dropping their weapons and joining the Galactic Assembly was a sham then. Lucas said the trade deal was too good to be true. The Morpaetha have used Thor to weaken us."
"And what will the Galactic Assembly say about this?" asked the doctor.
"Arcadia is a small player on the galactic stage, but we have proof that other planets are under threat.
the Assembly could sanction the Morpaether by denying them access to shared spaceways.
Other planets, said Perry.
It's not just the East Ridge, Perry, said the Doctor. They have camps wherever there are emerging economies in the galaxy.
He showed her the foreman's list.
All those poor people could be ripped to shreds, cried Perry.
We must confront Thor, said the Doctor. Give him the chance to explain himself.
But Doctor, we can't return. The werewolves, they're guarding everything, blurted Perry. I know how they're doing it, appearing wherever the Morpaether want them, I guess. Lucas told me that the tower's got a transmat inside it. They're looking for us now, and if we return to Odin, they'll be there, Doctor. I can't go through that again. It was horrible.
She got to her feet, and the Doctor put his arm around her shoulders.
The wolves are not our only problem, said the Doctor. Thor's popularity is an issue. If we are captured, he can say whatever he wishes, and the Barossi may follow his lead. We will be reduced to conspiracy theorists. We need the Barossi on board. No home telephones here. So, Sven, what's the most efficient means of mass communication?
That's easy. Most of Boris either works for Odin or shops at Odin. It's the store Tannoy.
So, if we can rally the townspeople at the store, we will have a chance to win hearts and minds, mused the Doctor.
But if we go to Odin to use the Tannoy, said Perry, inhuman resources will be waiting.
Looking for us in the TARDIS, said Sven. Except, he grinned, with a little help from my friends, I may be able to send them sniffing in the wrong direction.
But even if you can, the Morpaether can send more of them through their transmats, said Perry.
So, Perry, where would we find an expert on matter transference technologies? The Doctor asked.
She rolled her eyes at him.
Sven, your computer login, please. We need to send a message. Now, which of your colleagues would most wish to please Thor?
As the sun rose, Thor made his way through a bigger-than-usual crowd of people at the Megastore's entrance. They weren't queuing well, and this irked him. The storefront display had changed. His gut clenched as he saw that the snowflake patterns had been replaced by loud and chaotic Barossian ones. Behind him, the rude blasts of an Akkadian marching band were nearing. Panicking, he sought out an Odin uniform and saw Birgitta, the designer.
It's a great success, sir, she enthused, and we kept it secret until an hour ago, just as your message asked.
She showed him her sketchpad, flipping through her hasty, flamboyant scribbles, stopping when she got back to the previous day's work on the wardrobe range.
What was my message? Thor demanded.
That Hooga was out and Scandi-Barossian fusion was in, she replied, and that we were to arrange a spontaneous Barossian festival like what used to happen.
His mouth fell open.
Genius, sir, if I may say so. We worked all night,
Thor cursed, his fists in the air.
Oh, very good, sir, enthused Birgitta. We'll make a true Barossian of you yet.
I can't believe you managed to park right inside this tower, said Perry.
She stood in the doorway of the TARDIS and slowly turned the dial on a shortwave radio.
It helps that there is a strong power source to lock onto, conceded the Doctor. This is the real heart of Odin.
The coal black one, replied Perry,
as she surveyed the transmat platform, sleek against the rough brick interior, its console providing the only light other than that spilling out from the TARDIS. The radio chirped.
All right, Doctor,
said a crackly Sven.
Receiving ya, confirmed Perry.
Luckily, there's a huge crowd out there. I managed to get to my office okay,
said Sven.
Your message must have worked. The HR people are really agitated. It's too big for them to manage. They're naturally herding the people, even though they aren't in wolf form. Doctor, have you locked onto the targets yet?
On the Transmat's control board, the Doctor picked the monitor view of the storefront. He then adjusted the Transmat parameters.
"Indeed I have," he replied.
On the open channel, Perry heard Sven address the store tannoy in his chirpy supervisor voice.
"Staff call! Supervisor to HR. The Doctor has landed his police box in the entrance hall. Happily ever after. Staff call to Chippies. Please unveil the new walk-in wardrobe range."
At that moment, the external door to the tower was wrenched open.
Thor's silhouette filled the entrance. He was followed by two HR women. "So, it's a hostile takeover, is it, Doctor?" said Thor. "Disrupt the supply chain, undermine the brand, poach the staff, then offer a quick buyout when the Odin share price wavers."
"I don't think your backers would allow that," said the Doctor.
"More likely that I end up in a work camp, wouldn't you say? Hmm, Thor?"
"What nonsense! And there, look!" Thor pointed at the screen. "Your own brand, your police box, there's your takeover." On the monitor, a stream of HR reps converged on the entrance hall as the Chippies in unison hauled off the tarps to reveal a phalanx of police boxes, as per the designer's sketches. They courteously opened the doors to allow inspection by the eager HR staff, who rushed inside each one and then found themselves trapped as the Chippies quickly shut and locked the doors from the outside. The complaining human voices from within turned to barking as the beast scrabbled at the interior.
"That was all Bagheera's work, in fact," said the Doctor. "She was inspired by seeing my little conveyance, functional too, in keeping with your brand, as they're a handy way to transmat your pets back to Morpaetha."
He hit the transmat button. The TARDIS replicas dematerialized soundlessly. And applause broke out in the entrance hall at this parlour trick.
"Now," said Perry quietly into the radio. "Pets," said Thor.
The two HR reps snarled, barely able to contain their inner beast. Hair began sprouting from their cuffs and collars, and their canine teeth grew. Thor pressed himself back against the wall.
"What is going on? This is most unhoogly."
"Do you deny being in an evil alliance with the Morpaetha?" demanded the Doctor.
"Well, not an evil one. It's business. I can't help that this galaxy's been in a state of war for decades. My trade agreements brought peace.
And a landing site for Morpaethan troopships, should they wish it."
"Well, that's not in my portfolio," he cried, backing away from the increasingly hairy HR woman.
"So, you don't know about the prisoners of conscience in the East Ridge logging camp, guarded by those lycanthropes?" asked Perry. "Your human resources aren't human, by the way."
"No, I'm strictly branding and customer engagement. HR, facilitate the rest."
Thor froze as the beasts started to circle him on all fours, their suits tearing as their muscles swelled.
"Thor, you should be more careful who you do business with," said the Doctor.
Thor suddenly noticed their conversation echoing back at them through the monitor. The people in the store were paying rapt attention.
"Yes," the Doctor said. "Sven is broadcasting this conversation through the tannoy."
He cleared his throat.
"Dear Borosians, I am the Doctor. You are in grave danger. The esteemed Thor is just a man who has made a terrible mistake. Unwittingly, he has allowed the forces of Morpaetha to move against you by repressing your culture, tricking you into giving up your birth names and your traditions. And that was just the start of their plans. Even now, in contravention of galactic law, the Morpaetha have an army of werewolves ready to send through a transmat hidden in the Odin Tower and in all the other towers they are building across the galaxy."
The wolves crouched, ready to attack the Doctor and Perry. Their red eyes widened.
"This might be a good time to mention,"
the doctor said to the beast, that the population of Boros is now on its way to destroy this tower. Or you could join your pack. He gestured at the platform. The wolves hesitated, then jumped onto the device, one hitting a switch with its paw. They shimmered and disappeared as Sven and his pals piled into the tower. The doctor and Perry stood watching the carnival. Sven tapped the doctor's chest in farewell. We won't let our guard down again. We'll make Lucas and Ingrid's sacrifice count, he said, as he gave Perry a last embrace before joining the representatives from the Galactic Assembly. Thor peered out from their shuttle while the band played with extreme off-key enthusiasm in the background. Nice guy, she sighed. This is like Mardi Gras. What's that smell? Like a night out on Castro Street in San Fran. Ah, that's boxes of patchouli oil candles being thrown onto the bonfire, said the doctor, chuckling and taking her arm. Along with a lot of furniture. It's all getting very Norwegian wood, to quote my friend John Lennon. So, Perry, I got the show of bravado that I came for. Now, perhaps it's time to find our police box before they chuck that on the fire as well. The pair returned to the tower, and moments later a distinctive sound echoed from the tannoy. Sven paused in his negotiations for a moment to listen and to be thankful for the kindness of strangers. Thank you.